Judiciary Committee please come to order? Present, we have Senator Adams, Senator Frank, and myself. The first bill we'll take up is Senate Bill 376, the Omnibus Small Insurance Rewrite Legislation. And we do have, is it Jay Frank, who would like to testify on that? As Dave Wall said, he would ask, answer questions. I hope we don't ask any, but.
We've gone through this.
I've never seen such a thorough analysis in this committee.
We are ready for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jay Frank, and I'm here this afternoon on behalf of Allstate and State Farm Insurance Companies. Happily not to suggest or offer any kind of amendment to this bill, but merely to clarify what the intent is around one small section. And that is section 221 of the bill, page 155. And what section 221 is a provision that requires all motor vehicle homeowners and dwelling insurance policies to contain a mandatory appraisal clause for first-party property losses. That is, insurers under the policy who experience a loss, they submit a claim to their own insurer. This appraisal process allows the insured, if they have a disagreement about what the value of the loss is, to get an appraiser to appraise the value of the loss. The insurer gets its appraiser. If the two appraisers can't agree, then an umpire is appointed, and the umpire resolves the differences between the two appraisers. What we want to make sure is clarified with respect to the intent behind this section is that it only pertains to property losses. Both State Farm and Allstate support this type of a concept. Their concern is, because of experiences in other states, people have used this to dispute policy terms, policy definitions, and things other than property loss. So I'm here merely to clarify that that is the intent behind this particular clause, that it's only going to pertain to first-party property losses, and I believe Mr. Walsh will concur with that statement.
Mr. Walsh, you concur with that statement?
Yes, for the record, this is Dave Walsh from the Division of Insurance. We agree with Mr. Frank and feel that the language is clear. His desire to make the intent clear on the record is fine with us. We agree.
Okay, just so I understand this, this doesn't stop the ability of the adjuster and the individual who owns the house that got partially destroyed from sitting down and deciding what the number is. It's if there's a dispute, it goes to.
That's correct. If they can't agree, this is just an alternative means for resolving the dispute.
Okay. Okay. Questions by members of the committee? Just for understanding's sake, Senator Frank, the reason that I haven't taken a lot of time in this bill in this committee is that I sat through a great deal of time in the previous committee. It's one that we've left on the table in case we have problems, but a number of things have been changed. It's been gone through from every direction and appears to be reasonably bulletproof. That's the reason that we've left it on the table and dealt with it as we have. Senator Adams?
Are you ready for a motion? Move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for Senate Bill number 376, Labor and Commerce, be moved out of committee with individual recommendations.
We have a motion to pass out committee substitute Senate Bill 376, Labor and Commerce, with individual recommendations. Are there objections? Without objection, so ordered. That brings us to Senate Bill 441. And we are on teleconference for Senate Bill 441. This is introduced at the request of the university. Let's see.
Thank you.
And we have some people on teleconference and also here who would like to testify on this bill. You also have a sheet in your file. Wendy Redmond is not in the room right now. Donna Chantry, would you join us at the end of the table and state your name for the record? Give us your testimony.
I'm Donna Chantry. I am an employee of the University of Alaska Southeast here in Juneau. I'm an accounting technician with the Department of Education, Liberal Arts, and Science. Just to give you a little bit of background on myself, I am president of the University of Alaska Southeast Classified Association, which represents the support staff at the university. The University of Alaska Southeast Assembly, which is a group representing faculty, staff, students, and alumni, and also a co-vice president of the General Assembly, which is a statewide governance group. But today, I would like to speak with you about the classified employees and staff people's feelings on the exemption of the University of Alaska from under the Administrative Procedures Act. The governance bodies of all the administrative units at the university have spent several months in intensive review of the Administrative Procedures Act. In fact, we began reviewing it as early as August and took it back to our governance group. We have spent extensive time on this, and I'm here to present you the views that we have come to in our discussions. Because the Alaska Administrative Procedures Act adjudication procedures pertain to boards and commissions in third-party actions dealing with granting or denying a right, authority, license, or privilege, and because the university is not a board or a commission, the staff of the University of Alaska believe the university should be granted an exemption from this act. The quasi-judicial proceedings included in the Alaska Administrative Procedures Act are not intended for employee or student grievances. In fact, the Alaska Administrative Procedures do not apply to any employee group in the state aside from, at this time, the university, and we are indeed state employees. Employee and student grievance procedures incorporate constitutionally required due process protections and are built around a process of peer review and consideration. There are appeal rights at several levels, including to the president. Grievance councils are in place at each of the major administrative units. Those employees who work on the rural campuses have their grievances heard through their nearest major administrative unit. Under the present university grievance procedures, there is very little cost to the grievant or the university. Generally, the process works very effectively, and in fact, earlier this year I was called in on the early stages of three grievances, two of which appeared to be very serious and which I thought would truly go to the ultimate stage in the process. Through the university grievance process, all three of these were resolved at a very early stage with satisfaction all around. One of the great concerns of the classified employees right now is the cost involved in the quasi-judicial proceedings that all university grievances will begin to include with utilization of a formal hearing officer. We have not only the cost of the formal hearing officer, but the cost of hiring an attorney and the complexity and the formality of it all. I talked to a number of employees over the last several months who said, I have no idea how I could possibly afford to pay for my own attorney. I have no idea how I could take that much time away from my job in order to pursue a grievance under the terms of this act. And that's a grave concern. Of even more grave concern, however, at this time of budget crisis, and believe me, as a member of statewide governance and in talking to my constituents recently, we all understand the very grave situation the budget is in, and we understand what you are faced with, as we are too. We are extremely concerned about the fact that the reality is that the Alaska Administrative Procedures Act could wind up costing the university somewhere in the area of $200,000 a year for hearing officers and other costs associated with it. Therefore, we are asking that our recommendation be considered that the university be exempted. And we do this also based upon the fact that we understand there is a grandfather clause which would allow those individuals who wish to be have their grievances considered under this act to do so if they're under before the time that legislation, if it is to be passed, to exempt us would take place. And that basically concludes my testimony.
Questions by members of the committee? You just covered my last question, I think, but essentially anyone involved in the tenure argument, the Anchorage Community College argument, any of that is still going to be under the Administrative Procedures Act, even if this bill passes.
You know, if you don't mind, I'm going to refer you to Wendy because I'm not comfortable answering that.
The answer is
yes.
That is correct.
According
to Wendy. Okay, what is the, I noticed we've got a resolution opposed by the, and there are lots of different organizations, but it's the Faculty Senate of Southeast? Tell me what you're representing organizations and what they're representing organizations. What the...
Okay. My organization, the Classified Association, represents support staff. That's the people like myself who are accounting technicians or who work in the business office, either working with students that doing things like registering students, handling the money, people who work in the chancellor's office, handling a variety of duties there, department secretaries, administrative assistants, the people at physical plant who keep the building running, all the support kinds of staff people. Now, they're also at Southeast, the APT group, and that's the administrative, professional, and technical. They do not have a group that's actively involved at this time. So at this time, various members of that group have spoken to me directly in favor of exempting the university from this bill. However, I represent them only insofar as I'm president of the assembly, and I do not have a consensus from them to come to you with. But those are the people who would be the nurse, counselors, members of the administration, anybody in a technical position.
Okay, so the what we have from the Southeast Faculty Senate is essentially the certificated or the teaching staff.
Right, that's the teaching staff, yes.
Thank you. Questions by members of the committee? Okay, let's go. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's go to the teleconference network. We have, I believe, Bob Warner from Ketchikan. Are you online? And if you are, would you identify yourself and give us your testimony?
Yes, I'm Bob Warner, and I'm an associate professor with the University of Alaska Southeast. I was asked to come down here today to emphasize that last Friday the UAS Faculty Senate unanimously passed a resolution opposing the university exemption from the Administrative Procedures Act. I believe through Professor Olson in Juneau,
thank you. Are there questions by members of the committee? We don't have any questions here. I don't have a copy of the letter you referred to. You mentioned a letter that was supported by eight professors from down there. I don't seem to have a copy of that one. I do have a copy of the resolution opposing the bill. Now I've been just given a copy of the letter. Okay, thank you. If we don't have any questions, then we'll go on to, let's see, we'll go to Fairbanks for Ray Highsmith.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Senators. Privileged to have this chance to communicate with you about the proposed exemption of the University of Alaska from the APA. Just so that you have a better sense of who I am, I'm a faculty member in the Institute of Marine Science in the School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, and I'm presently the president of the University of Alaska Fairbanks Faculty Center.
thank you very much. Do we have any questions by members of the committee? Okay, we don't have any questions, so we'll go to Anchorage. And we have first in Anchorage, Steve DeSora. If I've pronounced your name right, and if I haven't, please tell me I'm wrong and how I can do it right.
This is Steve DeSora. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on the EPA exemption. I'm the personnel director at University of Alaska Anchorage, and I've worked with internal administrative grievance procedures within the university for about the last 13 years. And I am encouraging the committee to grant the university's request for an exemption under APA. My experience working with internal administrative procedures over the last 13 years have found that the peer review process that has been in place has been extremely effective. It's been effective for a few reasons, one of which has been a quick response mechanism that has allowed individuals to present their case, to work with within the organization to resolve the differences, hopefully at the lowest level possible. It's encouraged informal mediation efforts prior to filing formal grievances. It's encouraged individuals to work with the normal supervisory chain to address their problems. The addition of the Administrative Procedures Act to the process is intimidating to the average employee. The questions we've received since the change in the university procedures last fall has indicated to me that the addition of the APA and the complexity of it, the judicial nature of it, has indeed had a chilling effect on what it should be a fairly easily understood, fairly easily administered, and very effective internal administrative process. The grievance process was, the previous ones were designed to be internal administrative in nature and were very deliberately not constructed in a judicial or quasi-judicial fashion for that express purpose, so that individuals could effectively represent themselves and their own particular points of view within a defined set of guidelines and a structure that was indeed developed by individuals within the organization. The university governance process that you've already heard described by previous individuals testifying, and individuals had the opportunity to not only participate in the grievance process itself, but if they so chose, they could participate in amending or changing that process to more effectively work for the institution and the individuals. So again, my experience leads me to believe that the APA is an unnecessary introduction of a level that is not required for the organization's employees to resolve their own particular problems. Thank you, and I'd be happy to respond to any questions you may have.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? We don't have any questions, so let's go to Laura Kelly in Anchorage.
Sir, I'm going to defer to Professor Bukowski. Let me get him.
Thank you, Laura. I've never heard you defer to anyone.
Your own, sir.
Hi, I'm Art Bukowski. I'm an associate professor of mathematics. I'm chair of the Department of Mathematics, which includes computer science, applied statistics, and mathematics. I've been chairman of this department 8 out of the last 10 years. I'm currently on the University Assembly. I'm a voting member of that assembly, and I represent I'm also the chapter president of the American Association of University Professors here on this campus. We currently have about 20 members of UAA who are AAUP members. the AAUP Red Book. It says, in all cases where facts are in dispute, the accused teacher should be informed before the hearing in writing on the charges and should have the opportunity to be heard in his or her own defense by all bodies that pass judgment upon the case. The teacher should be permitted to be accompanied by an advisor of his or her own choosing who may act as counsel. There should be a full stenographic record of the hearing available to all parties concerned. Now, the implication there is that if a faculty member is terminated, he or she should have a counsel in any grievance procedure at any step. And so that's my first point. If there is going to be a grievance procedure that the university is going to have that will allow faculty members to have a grievance, a counsel or someone representing that person should be present, should be able to speak. And there, number two, should be a written document available. So that's dealing with academic tenure and termination of a faculty member who does or does not have tenure. Now, in another section of the AAUP Red Book is a statement on a grievance procedure, and I'm quoting again, the AAUP is, again, I want to remind you, generally accepted as one of the definitive writers of policies for academic situations, universities, or colleges. The first 2 points I've made is one, that a faculty member should be allowed to have someone, a counsel, who represents them and can speak for them, and two, a written record must be kept. Second part I want to talk about is a suggested policy on sexual harassment. The AAUP would like all universities and colleges to have a separate statement about sexual harassment. And in their suggested policies and procedures is a statement that will help or cover faculty grievances if a complaint is filed. Again, this is a part of a, quote, I believe, a grievance procedure. In that policy on sexual harassment or a sexual complaint, the suggested policy would be that a grievance officer should hear an initial discussion between the complainant and the grievance officer. After this initial meeting, a written statement is then given by the grievance officer, and then it should be directed to the appropriate supervisor. And this written document then becomes part of the official record. And again, the AAUP is recommending a completely separate procedure for sexual harassment, because at the first level, the sexual harassment charge is tried to be settled at the local, the most immediate supervisor position. However, later on during the grievance procedure, a faculty committee, strictly all faculty, should hear the written charge. There should be no administrators on this grievance committee. The faculty grievance committee then should make its recommendation, and any corrective action or disciplinary measure should then be taken by at the recommendations of that faculty committee. So there are other mentions of grievances in the Red Book. Now, the AAUP is represented at the University of Alaska by three different units. There's a unit of the AAUP in Juneau. There's a chapter in Anchorage that has, I believe, currently 21 faculty members. We're down this year, so several people haven't paid their dues, so they're officially not listed. Fairbanks has approximately 40 people in the AAUP chapter. But we do represent
thank you. Are there any questions by members of the committee? If not, thank you. And I guess we'll go back to Laura Kelly. Questions by members of the committee? Thank you. The last person we have signed up is Ralph McGrath.
Thank you, Senator Halpert, members of the
Judiciary Committee.
Appreciate this opportunity to speak to you as a faculty member with some 20 years of experience teaching in Alaska Community Colleges Federation of Teachers. We have provided the committee with a cover letter indicating our opposition to this legislation, and I will not take time to elaborate further on that. We do believe, and I would like to emphasize that the rights of all employees are at stake here, and collegiality is a nice concept when you're a part of the collegiality. When you're not, and I think that is true of so many employees at the university, they need to have a due process grievance procedure. We believe strongly that the rights that have been secured for the faculty through the unanimous decision of the Supreme Court are rights that should be maintained and protected by the legislature, and that the university should not be permitted to profit from its mistakes and mistaken policies and its treatment of all employees. I would like to just enunciate that in the remarks that were made by a representative of the classified, that it should also, I believe, be evident that the remarks that procedure was working is because, to the degree that the university is under a court order to rectify its faulty grievance process and incorporate those benefits, and that system has been in place since the fall, if those three grievances were referenced were worked out satisfactorily, then I would say it is working, and it should be given the opportunity to continue to work. I believe Senator Halford, the deferral by Laura Kelly is certainly appropriate, and I believe many of her remarks echo mine. With that, I would conclude my remarks, but am available for questions if needed.
Thank you. Do we have questions by members of the committee? Okay, we don't have any questions here, and that's the last person we have signed up, so we'll go back. We have Wendy Redmond signed up for any final questions. Could you go ahead?
Yes, sir. I just want to, I'd like to respond to just two quick things. I can't remember which speaker it was. I think it was Professor Kelly, who said that the university creates the grievance process. In fact, when it is the employees of the university, including the university faculty and staff, who create the policies and procedures at the university. They write and recommend on what these policies should be. So there is ample opportunity, and I would hope that Professor Bukowski will become active in trying to incorporate the AAUP standards into grievance. We certainly honor the AAUP standards and would very much like to have those incorporated. Number two, I believe that Professor Kelly also indicated that the university employees are not, do not have are not, only the APA would protect university employees to due process. I'd like to point out again that I believe the university honors both the state and the federal constitution and the 14th Amendment right to due process. And last, I would like to say that the issue that was brought up that initiated the Supreme Court decision, that is a grievance that was brought by former community college faculty members at Anchorage. It is correct that the grievance committee in Anchorage recommended that a procedure outside the university. I think if we go back and look at the record, it was because the issues that were being brought by the faculty at that time were clearly issues of much greater, a much broader scope than they had been used to dealing with. They were really collective bargaining issues that were not really appropriate, they felt, for their particular process, and that's why they made the recommendation at that time. Thank you very much.
This is Laura Kelly. May I respond?
Go ahead briefly. Wendy, why don't you stay at the table?
Class action suit brought by the 130 faculty members were brought over issues of promotion and tenure. Tenure was
Okay, I guess we could get into a debate, which I'd prefer not to do, but the issues of during restructuring of promotion and tenure were really issues of how the former community college faculty members would be assigned promotion and tenure following the restructuring.
Thank you. Okay, questions by members of the committee? Discussion? What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Frank.
I would move that we pass out Senate Bill number 441 with individual recommendations.
We have a
and
motion.
Ask unanimous consent.
We have a motion to pass out Senate Bill 441 with individual recommendations. Are there objections? Without objection, the bill will be passed out with individual recommendations. That brings us to Senate Bill 254, I believe.
Thank you, Senators.
Okay. 254. This is, well, this is House Bill 254, excuse me.
No, Senate Bill.
No.
Senate Bill.
Well, somewhere in my file you put a House Bill, so you can keep it. I think I'd like to have the Senate Bill for the file. Thank you. Okay, let's see. Do we have a sign-up sheet for this one? Okay. We have Chris Christensen from the court system who would like to testify, and we have Tom Williams. Yeah, there he is. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Charles Christensen. I'm staff counsel to the Alaska court system. Senate Bill 254 was introduced by this committee at the request of the Supreme Court. It was drafted with the assistance of the Department of Law and the Department of Revenue. Its primary purpose is to approve the procedure surrounding execution by a creditor on the permanent fund dividend of a debtor. As the members are aware, current law provides that a creditor may execute on the dividend of a debtor just as a creditor may execute on any other property or such as a bank account of a debtor. The amount which the creditor may seize is limited to 55% of a dividend unless the creditor is executing on a dividend in order to satisfy a child support obligation, restitution, or debt owed to the state. In that case, the entire dividend may be seized. The current procedures surrounding execution are cumbersome, expensive, and frequently fail to give adequate notice to the debtor that his dividend is being seized. We see four specific problems with existing law. Have attempted to correct these problems in Senate Bill 254 briefly. First, existing law requires the creditor to serve notice of the execution on the debtor. Aside from being unwieldy and expensive, these existing notice procedures are unnecessary since the Department of Revenue automatically sends notice to a debtor that the dividend is being seized. Second, a creditor frequently does not know where the debtor can be reached in order to notify the debtor that the dividend is being seized. A great expense can be incurred by the creditor in attempting to locate and serve the debtor. If the debtor is located, these expenses are then charged to the debtor as a cost of the collection. And if the debtor can't be found, there are procedures which allow the creditor to seize the dividend without notice. Finally, since the state is frequently the creditor seeking the execution, the unnecessary expense of this notice requirement prevents it from attempting to collect many small debts that are owed to the state. Senate Bill 254 proposes to correct these specific problems by eliminating the existing notice requirement. Instead, it would require the Department of Revenue to continue to give notice as it does now, but to expand that notice so that it meets with due process requirements and becomes legally adequate notice of the attempted seizure. Because the department already sends notice, it would have no additional expense in expanding the sort of notice that it gives. Because the creditor has provided the department with a current address, or the debtor rather, has provided the department with the current address in order to receive the dividend, the debtor is much more likely to get notice that the dividend is going to be seized than under the existing procedure. And finally, because notice procedures will be less expensive, the state will be able to economically pursue smaller debts that are under the state. The second major problem which the bill attempts to correct is found in the exemption from execution that the legislature has provided. As I noted previously, 45% of a dividend is exempted from execution unless the execution is for child support restitution or debts to the state. However, there is a statute in the exemption code which provides a $1,400 liquid assets exemption to persons per month. And if some creditors have argued that, or some debtors rather have argued that this liquid assets exemption would apply to their PFD. Now, when the PFD, the 45% exemption was passed many years ago by the legislature, we believe that its intent was not to allow that liquid assets exemption to apply, since the liquid assets exemption amount is $1,400 and the PFD has never reached that amount. Clearly, allowing a liquid assets exemption to apply to the PFD would mean that an entire PFD would always be exempt, not just 45% of it. We've done an informal survey of our judges, and while the Supreme Court has never spoken on this issue, as far as we're able to determine, there's only one judge in the state, that being the magistrate in Palmer, who actually will give debtors this liquid assets exemption. The bill proposes to clarify the legislature's intent and make it clear that the liquid assets exemption does not apply to PFDs, but instead the only exemption which applies is that 45% exemption. The third major problem is that, as noted above, creditors may seize the entire dividend to pay for child support, restitution, or other debts. Now, court-ordered fines are a debt owed to a state agency when the court-ordered fine is has been ordered as a result of a violation of state law. However, of course, our municipalities all have laws. Many of them prosecute their laws, and the judges order fines for violation of those laws. Now, if a municipality attempts to collect on a permanent fund dividend for a court-ordered fine, they can only get 55% of it. They can't get all of it, even though the state could get all of it if it were prosecuting the identical action as a state crime. The bill corrects this by adding court-ordered fines to the list of items that are exempted from the 45% amount, thus treating municipal law and state law equally. The final problem is that while current law prioritizes claims against a dividend, it's not clear whether these listed priorities apply only in the case of involuntary execution or whether they also apply when a debtor makes a voluntary assignment of a dividend. And this bill would provide that it applies in both cases. There should be a letter in your file that has been signed by the commissioners of administration, revenue, public safety, as well as the attorney general in support of the legislation. It does not cost any agency any money, and it actually streamlines procedures and helps alleviate a little bit of the paper workload of all those agencies.
How come you didn't get any more commissioners to sign the letter?
Running short of time, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Questions by members of the committee? Senator Adams.
Can you give this committee an estimate of your outstanding fines that you have presently today?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Adams, no, I don't.
But would you say it could be in the amount of $5 to $10 million?
I really have no idea.
Okay, sorry. but you know there's outstanding fines.
Yes, there are.
Okay, but yet in this piece of legislation, if it passed, there is a zero fiscal note. Don't you think that there would be a guesstimate that you will be getting some money back if this collection takes place?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Adams. The Attorney General's office does have an attorney whose job is dedicated to the collection of fines. I believe that and when those fines are collected, they go back to the general fund. So I don't know that there'd be any impact on the court system if more fines were collected.
Okay. Well, there should be a revenue. I Senator Adams is
but right. Yeah, I know that's going to get up there, but... section number four, we don't have to move the bill. Section number four shows that 55% is going to be collected. That's on page number two, lines 19 on. Why is that the court can get 55% when other debt collectors cannot? what is the reasoning behind it so I can understand it?
Certainly. At the present time, any debt owed to any state agency is 55%. That's existing law, and that would include court-ordered fines. The reason that language is added there is not because it affects collection of court-ordered fines for state law. It's because it affects court-ordered fines for municipal law. Basically, it allows municipal criminal fine collection to be treated the way existing law treats state criminal fine collection.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps we should use this bill. And still going on page 2, the last paragraph is court-ordered fines there that the money goes to. Wouldn't it be better that if the money went to post-secondary for scholarships, that if we educate Alaskans, perhaps they wouldn't be in the court system today if they had a good education and a job, putting them first to collect the money? And so, you know, this is something that we should do. Why is it the courts? Why is it the courts? We passed a supplemental the other day in $407,000, when if you press the button on LAA, they have $12 million in their kitty. But yet we pass a supplemental for them. I think we're going backwards. I know. But I think we're going backwards in this piece of legislation. We should have number 3, post-secondary, so we can educate the people. You used the term, well, that's another subject. You used the term twice. Why the Supreme Court? Why this on Supreme Court? Is there some court case going on that... okay. Not with the indigency rules or anything like that? Nothing?
No.
Okay. Is there anything in Supreme Court that has to do with the indigency? Indigency?
Their indigency, or yeah. Is that what the term is?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Adams, the Supreme Court is working on a new court rule relating to indigency.
To adopt that?
Yes, but that...
that has nothing to do with this?
No. The reason that the court... as the members know, the... members who've looked at the court's budget, there are requests. New laws are constantly being passed. Our clerical staff is constantly being made busier and busier. This is one way of very slightly reducing their clerical load so we don't need to constantly come back and ask the legislature for more funding for clerical staff.
I would like this. I might have an amendment that put post-secondary first, court second, or something in some type of pecking order so... we can take care of the APA agreements we just had with that last bill.
Can the post-secondary commission take dividends?
Yes.
Where are they on the list?
They'd just be like everybody else, right? They get no preferential reward.
Well. Okay, we have somebody else to testify. We have Tom Williams from Permanent Fund Dividend Division of Revenue.
May I ask us a question? If you'll, the fiscal note also to revenue is just the changes and requirements and procedures. Why is with these changes that will be made if this bill does pass? Why is there zero fiscal note also with you, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Williams. I'm director of the PFD Division of Permanent Revenue. The fiscal note is zero because when we send out a dividend or when we send out a notice that says when we send out a notice, we already tell people that their dividend has been garnished or attached or assigned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's just adding a little bit of language on it. So there really is no additional cost to the department.
Okay.
The second thing that, as Mr. Christensen indicated on the letter, the department does support the legislation as indicated by Commissioner's signature to that letter. The one thing that I would request would be an amendment to Section 6. When this was originally drafted, the idea, and I believe that's part of your packet there, requested amendment dated March 31st, just to substitute the language on that amendment for the language currently in the bill.
This is a replacement Section 6?
Yes.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. That is correct. And the language as originally drafted was a little confusing. It's intended to do the same thing. When the legislation was originally passed with regard to post-secondary education, and they do fall under the definition of a state agency, so they're number 4 on that list.
Senator Adams.
courts in section number 4 would collect up to 55%. This section 6, what does post-secondary can't collect up to now in present law?
Post-secondary education, like any other state agency, can collect up to 100%.
Up to 100.
The general exemption is 45% to everybody. Then there are the in the legislation, there are currently 3, the proposed 4 exemptions. It's an, sort of an exemption to the exemption. Basically, any of those 4 can collect 100% of the dividend. Since post-secondary education is a state agency, just like any other state agency, they can collect 100% of the dividend. 45% exemption does not apply to them.
Further questions? Senator Frank, you don't have any questions?
Mm-hmm. Do you like my rationale?
I'm not sure it's rationale.
We need another day to sleep on it, maybe.
I'm more interested in the indigency situation.
Pronunciation of it?
Yeah.
No, well, that too, you know. I like, I hear that the court is working on some new rules there. I think they ought to.
Thank you.
They ought to take everybody's permanent fund dividend when they perform public defense work, for them, in my opinion. I don't know if this is the appropriate place to so state or the court's working on that. This time or not, but they keep saying they're working on it, or somebody keeps saying they're working on it, but I don't see any change. But maybe Chris could answer that.
It's an act relating to, among other things, the collection of debts by execution on dividends.
Well,
and
it's in the Senate, too. It's
dividends.
A fair, you know, we do have the authority broad.
Let me answer Frank's question. The indigency rule is not something that I've been working on. My understanding is that the Supreme Court has approved a rule which is going to take effect this year, and which will have the effect of taking or requiring indigents to sign over the dividend. I'm not particularly familiar with it. I do know that there's a great deal of controversy about it. We'll be the first state that does anything of that nature, and I'm sure it's going to be litigated.
Well, the first state that gives out dividends,
right?
Aren't we?
Well, it will be the first state that actually requires people to sign over their rights to money at the same time they're being declared indigent, that they don't have any.
Well, then they shouldn't be declared indigent.
Right, and
you know, can't have it both ways.
So that yes, this is something the court's worked on, and it should go into effect later this year.
Can you get us a copy of that rule?
I believe I have one up in my office. I'll drop it by later today.
Thank you. I mean, you know, they've got everybody they see is indigent. I mean, we got 12,000 people out there that are indigent, and we only have 12,000 cases. I mean, everybody, I don't know who isn't. Surprises me to have as many indigents as we have court cases. Anyway, go, yeah, if you could get that for me, I'd like it.
Okay. Senator Adams, since you have some interest in.
Yes, let me have a chance to look at this.
We have a proposed amendment. I think what we will do is at least for drafting purposes, draft a CS that changes this.
Fine.
But that will just be our next draft, and we will have this bill back before us.
Fine. I have no intentions of holding it. I just might have some proposed amendments with how to category the collection of something like this by state agencies. So.
Okay.
Okay.
Is there any further business to come before the committee today? If not, we're adjourned.